The last case of the morning is number 032469, the United States against Terry Day. May it please the court, good morning, Your Honors. My name is Joel Winnick. I'm a solo practitioner in Madison, Wisconsin. And is this microphone working? It's like a buzz in it to me. I represented Terry Day at trial, and I'm representing him on this appeal. Mr. Day was had a prior felony conviction, and he was charged with being a felon in possession of a weapon. He was convicted at trial and sentenced to 51 months. The evidence at trial, it's undisputed that there was no physical evidence connecting Mr. Day to the weapon. No physical evidence whatsoever. There were three witnesses that said that he was in possession of a weapon, but the date on which they said he was in possession of a weapon was in September, and the weapon was not turned over to law enforcement authorities until November. The weapon in question was undisputedly originally owned by one Ryan Hart. The government's theory and proof was that somehow he got the gun from Ryan Hart and he possessed it. The defense theory was that the gun was stolen from Ryan Hart by Jamie Kramer, who was the boyfriend of Mr. Day's then wife,
daughter.
Yeah. Thank you, Your Honor. And so it was our theory that because it was a contentious marriage that ended in divorce, and because there were ample motives to plant this gun on Mr. Day and say that it belonged to him, that was the theory of the defense. And the key part of the evidence on that was to show that in the chain, although we didn't have the burden of proof, obviously, but the reasonable doubt we would have created is that the jury could well have believed that it was plausible that Jamie Kramer stole that gun and with Rachel Ruth and the mother planted the gun on Mr. Day.
Now, but Mr. Winnig, I mean, the government basically, I don't think anybody thinks your theory is impossible, but we're focusing on the motion in limine, for starters, and there are a number of things you could have done to have established Kramer's access to the gun, his knowledge of the gun, the fact that he worked for Hart, as opposed to sort of the direct question, did you steal the gun, which, of course, you pretty much assume he's either not going to answer or he's going to say no to, but in terms of trying to develop this reasonable doubt in the jury's mind as to whether it's Mr. Day who's the one who took the gun from Hart, there were lots of things that could have happened quite consistently with the court's ruling, and the court was worried about the speculative nature of your theory.
Well, first of all, one of the question here is what's the standard of review? I submitted that it's de novo, because this goes to the key right of confrontation of Mr. Kramer. There's an assumption made by the court, and I think by the government, that we would have known what Mr. Kramer would have said. And in the research that I was just finishing up this morning, I found a reference that goes back to the 1800s about cross-examination being the legal system's great, no greater engine of truth has been ever been discovered. Now, my nervousness today, I'm not claiming I would have been the best conductor of that engine of truth, but I really think I did not get to confront this witness in a way that I could have built that evidence at trial, which is, it's not all these other questions about did you have access, which I did have an opportunity to do.
So that was before the court.
Yes, there's testimony about him working there, but I was limited to saying...
You could ask that he knew the gun was there, that
right.
he had a gun,
because
so they know that too.
Yes, it was clear. In fact, I was allowed to ask, did you ever see the gun between the time it was at the shop and the time it was allegedly found under the dresser? And he said no. But where I would have wanted to go to really confront him is, well, wait a minute, how can you say that's true? I mean, you admit that you stole pot pipes from Mr. Hart, don't you? Yes. Why
do we know
that?
Is that in the record someplace? I mean, there's a lot of discussion about the stealing of the pot pipes.
I believe it's in the record in the sense that it's not contradicted. It was in FBI reports that didn't come into evidence. But
so it was in the sentencing? Where do we know that from?
Well, I think we have it essentially from a stipulation from the government. That's why they brought the motion to suppress, which I cited in my brief in the record, because they knew that he had told the FBI that, yes, he did steal these pot pipes, and they knew that I wanted to ask about it. And I would also like to say, Your Honor, that I did as much research as possible and couldn't find a single case where the defendant was arguing, here's how you apply Rule 404B. There's all this law about the prosecution and all the exceptions, and I've submitted in fairness that I don't think there's any question that if the government tried to prove possession of the gun by Mr. Day with Mr. Day's statement that he had stolen from Mr. Hart, that would have been allowed in as proof of plan, motive, all the things that I was arguing. So why, when it's on the other foot, do I not get to argue that? And Ms. Case has this court has a four-prong test in the Shackelford and Huddleston cases that I cited. I think it's an opportunity to enunciate a test, because the one thing we don't have here is we don't have any prejudice to the witness. Nothing's going to happen to Mr. Kramer when I get to ask him about it, so there's no prejudice to him on applying 404B. But when you look at that standard, I did not get to confront the witness, and it's not a peripheral matter at all. It was the direct heart of the testimony. I didn't get to ask him, did he steal this gun and plant it? And I didn't get to ask him, how can you deny stealing that gun when you stole other things from this individual? I think that would have been a turning point and would have ended up with a different result. So,
but the motion in limine didn't prevent you from asking whether he stole the gun, did it? I thought it just said you couldn't probe this stealing of the pot pipe.
Well, I understood it, and I have great respect for the trial judge. I understood it to mean that I couldn't say anything about stealing because I didn't have any foundation to say. The only basis I thought I could even get to the question about stealing the gun was to say, to get him to admit that he stole the pot pipes. I think it would have been improper for me to just say, well, did you steal the gun? I asked him if he had ever seen it, but given that background, I don't think I could have said, and I didn't say, because I didn't want the government to object and say, Mr. Winnig knew about that prior ruling, then I could have lost credibility with the jury. So I felt I had to stay completely away from that area. That's the main point of the appeal, and I have a warning that I'm entering my rebuttal time, so I'll stop. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Winnig. We'll hear now from Mr. Helke.
Thank you. Good morning, Your Honors. My name is Stephen Helke, and I'm an assistant in the Western District of Wisconsin. I was trial counsel before the district court. I'd like to answer, I hope, a few of the questions that were asked regarding where things are in the record. At page 15 of our brief, and it's at record 42, certain reports of the ATF and also the Dane County Sheriff's Department were introduced at the time of sentencing, though they were both available to counsel as part of discovery, that contained the various interviews of Ryan Hart, the man who owned the shop where the gun was, by everyone's testimony, in the summer of 2001. Mr. Hart was interviewed on several occasions, first by the Dane County Sheriff's Department, later by federal authorities, specifically the ATF. His first interview contains information that says he doesn't know where the gun went. All he knows is he kept it at his shop. It was there in July, I believe, in the summer. He had some medical difficulties. He was also closing down his shop at that time. This is down in the reports. And then when he comes back and to his shop again, the gun's gone. He didn't give it to anyone. He didn't sell it to anyone. During the course of the investigation, once it came to our office and the ATF was involved in investigating it, Mr. Hart said that Mr. Kramer had stolen the gun and that he believed that it had been stolen by Mr. Kramer. When he was re-interviewed by ATF and pushed a little further as to the basis for his statement that Mr. Kramer had taken the gun, he said, well, that's what the defendant, Mr. Day, and Mr. Day's brother, Eddie, told him. So the defendant and his brother, Eddie, are telling Hart that Kramer stole the gun. That was the only basis for his saying that, and it was complete speculation and hearsay, which led to, and I'm answering another question, what the motion in limine contained. The first motion in limine was indeed, Your Honor, that any testimony or argument that Jamie Kramer stole the gun in question, and then as grounds for this, the United States asserts that any such testimony would lack foundation and be based simply on hearsay. And the concern was that Mr. Hart would get on the stand and assert without any foundation, and because we felt it was hearsay, that the gun had been stolen by Mr. Kramer. So it was, in some ways, the motion limited a little broad in the sense of saying any testimony or argument regarding the gun, but it was really directed at this Ryan Hart question, Your Honor.
Because your brief, maybe it's someplace else, I mean, at one point in your brief, on page 6, you say the United States filed a motion limine seeking to preclude, among other things, any testimony or argument that Jamie Kramer stole certain pot pipe.
True. And
but you also, I mean, it's sort of a major thing if it included the gun, too.
It did. There's no doubt that
among other things.
Well, fingerprints on the gun was one question that we, mm-hmm. you know, we filed a motion in limine. It wasn't directly germane, but I don't want to confuse anyone. Certainly, that there was no doubt that the issue of the gun being stolen by Jamie Kramer was part of the motion in limine. When you read the transcript, when you read the district judge's colloquy with defense counsel just before trial, the issue of the stealing of the gun is really not even mentioned. It goes right into the pot pipes being stolen, and that was really more of the emphasis, if I might, at trial in terms of the motion in limine. I would pick up on the comments in terms of the standard of review here. It did not implicate a core Sixth Amendment issue in this case. Defense counsel was able to ask the ultimate question after the court ruled initially before trial on the motion to eliminate. Counsel approached the bench and again asked to introduce the evidence regarding the gun, and this is at record 39, pages 43 and 44, and the court does say, well, you can ask him the also question, did you possess or did you ever see the gun or hold it between March, when he had testified he had last seen it, and basically the day of trial, and Mr. Kramer says, no, I never saw it. Moreover, there were a lot of testimony that would go to the motive or the why they would try to frame him. Strictly speaking, I don't know that it's relevant, and the court comments on that, and this is found in the appendix, that it's not relevant how the gun got there, whether it was bought, stolen, or was a gift. The question is, did Mr. Day possess it? And defense counsel, through the course of trial, asked Mr. Kramer if Terry and Elizabeth were having marital problems. The jury knew that Mr. Kramer and his fiancée were living in the basement. They knew that there was some sympathy by the daughter for her mother. Defense counsel was allowed to cross-examine Rachel about the fact that her mom wanted a divorce. She admits that her mom wanted the gun for some leverage. It was never really explored how a gun would be leveraged in the divorce proceeding. But those facts were all elicited and could probably have been argued. So there was no core Sixth Amendment right violated here, and government does believe that the proper standard would be abuse of discretion and does not believe that the district court erred in that regard for the reasons set forth in the brief. Unless there are any further questions, I think that our position on the two-point enhancement is clear. I think that the district court was clear. Her interpretation or her statement that even if you assume for the sake of argument that someone else stole the gun, it's clear that Ryan Hart did not give it or sell it to somebody, and the comments to the guidelines essentially impose a strict liability standard. If the gun was stolen, the two-point enhancement applies. District court properly did that. There certainly was not a miscarriage of justice in this case. There was more than ample evidence to sustain the jury's verdict, especially under the daunting standard of review which would apply in this case, given that the fact that there was no renewal of the motion at the close of all of the evidence or for a new trial in this case. Unless there are any further questions, I conclude and thank Your Honor for your attention.
Thank you, sir. Mr. Whiting, you have 2 minutes.
Thank you, Your Honors. Essentially, what Mr. Elke's argument is that this case should have been tried the way the government wanted to try it and the way the court determined with the limit, but he didn't answer the question of, isn't this 404B evidence that if he had tried to put it in and say that that's an admission that Mr. Day had stolen from Mr. Hart, wouldn't that be highly probative of a way that Mr. Day might have gotten the gun? So when I was precluded from doing that, I think that's an opportunity to say what defendants are entitled to do. And it's clearly a core issue. It's not tangential like the case that he had cited where the defense got to argue about plea bargains, but they couldn't go into the deal about what the details of the plea bargain was. I didn't get to impeach on the key area. As to the testimony, there's enough in the record to say that Mr. Hart, having seen the kind of evidence that Mr. Day is convicted on, doesn't want to have anything to do with the idea that he gave the gun to Mr. Day. If in fact it's proven beyond a reasonable doubt that Mr. Day had the gun, it just doesn't make any sense that he stole it from Mr. Hart. There's nothing in the relationship that would indicate that he had any reason to do that. And as to the manifest injustice, I would just ask the court, on the high standard, given the timing of the case and the conditions it was under, if in fact that this isn't the kind of case where we think justice miscarried, where there's no physical evidence, where there's just three people that say he had a gun, they could have said he had anything that they found under the dresser. So because there's a credibility question, and apparently under the conditions the case was tried, the jury chose to find that the case was tried beyond proved beyond a reasonable doubt, I don't think the evidence is there. And particularly because I was so limited in attacking the key witness where these three people had come together to say my client had this. So I respectfully request that the decision of the court be reversed and a new trial be ordered. Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you, Mr. Whiting. Mr. Whiting, you took this case by appointment of the court, and you have the court's deep thanks for the fine efforts that you've made on behalf of your client.
Thank you, Your Honor, and I appreciate the opportunity to do it. It's been a good experience for me. I hope I do better next time.
Thank you. Our thanks to both lawyers. The case will be taken under advisement, and the court will stand in recess until 9:30 tomorrow.